you've tapped or clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
All right, good day everyone, and welcome to episode 12? Yes, 12 of College Volleyball Weekly Men's Top 20. On screen, as always, Dan Friend of Lewis, Jay Hossick of George Mason, Theo Edwards of CSUN, Brad Rostetter of UC San Diego, and craziness, two-thirds away done the season now, or is it, three-fourths. We're week 12, so only four more weeks. See, I took some math at UC Irvine. It worked. So, always start with Elf in the Room to promote these gentlemen's programs since, you know, they're taking the time to talk about the entire NCAA men's volleyball team programs across the nation. And we had some face-offs earlier this week, but let's start with Dan in the MEVA and what he had going on this week.
Ooh, well, personally, we played McKendree and Quincy, and I think McKendree was on a 5-match win streak, and they came in and handed us a loss in 5. But Nikki's group was playing some really great volleyball, and I think we had a couple opportunities, but didn't kind of shut the door, and they kind of pushed on through with it. And then they went over to Loyola, and Loyola revenged their first round conference tournament upset from last year on McKendree, and kind of gave them a loss in 3. But Loyola also beat Quincy. But then I think the big one with us was you had Purdue Fort Wayne with 2 sweeps, 1 against Lindenwood and 1 against Ohio State. Now, again, no Jacob Pasture, and so there's some pieces shifted on that a little bit from that standpoint. But, you know, 2 sweeps at home for Purdue Fort Wayne was huge for the Rock and the group in terms of that. And then you saw Ball State come out victorious again as well. So Ball State's leading the MEVA right now and at 8-1 or 9-1 and sitting in a pretty good spot. Oh, yeah, Ball State beat Ohio State, in 4. So that was a key match, I think, in terms of Ball State kind of edging towards and kind of taking the lead in league. And there certainly is still a cluster in the middle with us between us and Purdue and Lindenwood and everybody else that sits in the middle. And I think Loyola has got a little bit of separation along with Ohio State, but it'll be interesting over the next couple of weeks. Lots of leagues games as well from that standpoint. Loyola's got to go down to McKendree, and McKendree's kind of sitting at 7-4, so they're in a pretty good spot. But McKendree's got some tough ones coming up between Ohio State and Loyola and a couple others. And so, and we go out to Queens, but I think certainly Purdue showing a little moxie right now, as Jay would say, in the middle of conference, the other 8. So, yeah.
Well, there's quite a logjam after Ball State at the number 1 spot. Like you were saying, Loyola, Ohio State, McKendree, you guys, that's Lewis for all you not familiar with Dan. Purdue, Fort Wayne, just outside that bubble, they're 8-3, 8-4, 7-4. And 5-5. So I don't know, these last few weeks could be a really fun. Well, they have been fun to watch in the MEVA because things have been unexpectedly happening. So
there's going to be a tie. We just don't know how many teams are going to be in the tie this year. I'm just telling you that. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
That'd be a great matchup to see in the MEVA quarterfinals, Purdue Fort Wayne against Ohio State again, and seeing if they could solidify that victory.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump over to our East Coast friend, Jay Hossick of George Mason. So jump on in and tell us what has happened with your team and your conference happenings.
Yeah, a few matches I'll talk about. I want to talk about the Ohio State Purdue Fort Wayne. It's not without controversy. There was a point at 23-all where in the third game, where a ball was dug on the Ohio State side and it went over the antenna. And I don't know if it was in or out of the antenna. I'm just going to assume that it was playable. And one of the Purdue Fort Wayne players kind of stood close to the sideline. I don't know if he was engaging with the player that came around to play that ball or not, but there was apparently a little hullabaloo, and there was some discussion not only at that moment, but after the match as well. And Kevin's guys were on the losing end of that. So I'm interested to hear what anybody has to say, if they heard anything or talked to anybody about that. But in the EIVA, I'll talk about us first. We played Mount Olive, who is in second place of the Conference Carolina. It's a very scrappy and good team. You know, there's 3 teams right now in that conference: Belmont Abbey, Mount Olive, and North Greenville, that are all really good teams. You know, we did not overlook them. We prepared against them just like we would anybody else. And they got a few guys on that team that can really hit the ball well and move it around. And, you know, we took them in 3-0 the first night and took them in 3-1 the second night. One of our kids, Omar Hoyos, had his 1,000th kill for his career on Saturday night, which is pretty cool to celebrate. And, you know, we went 2-0 on the weekend and had a lot of injuries. So we got to play some other guys, and that's good, and get them some competition ready status. NJIT went out to Grand Canyon and lost in 4 both nights, but NJIT showed that they've still got a little gas left in the tank, and they're going to be dangerous come tournament time. Grand Canyon handled them, you know, outside of that, but NJIT is a team that if you're not paying attention, they'll sting you a little bit. I think the big matches this weekend was St. Francis versus Penn State. That's, you know, a crosstown rival, if you will. Loretto is about 45 minutes away from State College. And on Friday night, they were at 12-all in the fifth set, and Penn State pulled it out. And everybody thought that was maybe a fluke. However, St. Francis went in yesterday at Penn State's house and went 5 with them again there, and they were up 2-1. So, you know, I don't know if that says anything particular about Penn State, but it shows that St. Francis has got some firepower. And when, you know, they go up against Long Island and everybody else in the NEC, they're going to be a handful. You know, and again, they run a fast offense to the left side, and, you know, Rummy's doing some nice things up there. So that's what's going on in the EIBA. Princeton went 5 with Fairleigh Dickinson, and Fairleigh Dickinson's without their top opposite. You know, Princeton pulled one out there in Hackensack, and, you know, we're getting ready for the second half of conference, which is coming up in a week or so. We see Princeton in 2 weeks and everybody else starts back up. So that's what's going on in the East.
All right. Any other coaches want to comment on the EIVA or just Jay even?
Jay, when are you getting your bus, by the way? Like, have you ordered that thing? Is it coming in? So, like,
it's you mean this bus?
Yes, this bus.
Yeah. So the electric bus is coming out soon. I am number one on the waiting list when it comes out. I'll see, though. I've got some options that I'm thinking about. One of them is a replica from Brazil, and I know that Volkswagen fanatics will hate me for that, but I can get a replica of a 1964, 65, 21 window microbus for, you know, $40,000. I might just take somebody up on that. So, but when the new bus comes out, I'm definitely online. I want to see what it looks and feels like, and we'll see if I pull the trigger or not.
Speaking of that play at Purdue Fort Wayne, I spoke with the official in that scenario.
Not to be named.
Not to be named, as we don't do that. They felt like it wasn't. They felt like there wasn't interference with what the play was, and he kind of stood by the call in terms of that. And like there wasn't, he didn't deliberately push, shove, or move or do anything in that space from that standpoint. Do you know what I mean? It was just there. So, anyway, just feedback from that side.
I went in and pulled it up on Volumetrics. and it looks like he's yelling in his face. and what I think is because the setter pursues the ball outside the pole and outside the antenna, right. But if he goes under the net, then for sure that's interference. But the fact he went around and the contact he makes isn't great with the ball. Granted, he has a guy yelling in his face, but I think if he goes under the net, that's for sure an interference play.
Interference, you can't yell at somebody?
Well, I mean, I think when you're making a motion and you're already a foot outside the court.
Yeah, but I don't know. Does the rule define as interference as in? I'm just asking. This isn't me giving my opinion.
Interpretation of the rule is if you are outside of your playable court, so if you're being the sideline, then that puts you in a position to be interfering.
Sideline,
you're cool.
It used to be a rule that you couldn't say anything during the toss of the server back in the day. We've been warned on that over the years, not necessarily at Mason, but I've watched it over the course of different teams playing, and which is just obscene to me, but, you know, whatever.
Me included.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a red card in San Diego this week for nothing interference wise.
What was it?
What's that?
So what was it for?
Yeah, are we going to the next segment, Rob? Are we moving?
Well, I, Are we done with Jay? Or, I mean,
oh, I'm done. I wanted to run the. I want this. Nita. I want to hear what this is.
Jay should have a what? Hey, need a Volkswagen van 1-888 so and so, like running beneath a ticker tape. But you know, if he's wants to let go of the segment there, we were focusing on him and his conference. But yeah, you know, we can always go to the Battle Royale or Karate Kid 6 or whatever you want to call it.
Made Battle Royale with cheese. I want to hear why we got a red card. This is interesting.
Well, since Theo is talking about red card and he is sporting the red t-shirt, we might as well just go to him first and let Brad gloat in his glory.
Sure, yeah. The weekend was fantastic in terms of the level of volleyball, the quality of the opponents. I mean, I thought San Diego did a terrific job. I'm sure Brad will touch on this too, but like, I think this was one of the first weekends for our team where there was a lot of strategy changes going back and forth and back and forth. And I thought San Diego just ended up finishing a little bit better than we did. And the first match at San Diego, it was our first match of the week. It was obviously their second match. They had already played Harvard earlier, and I felt like they were really humming, and we hadn't been on the road in quite a bit. And their crowd did a really nice job, and the facility was great. And I thought it kind of took us out of our game, but there was a moment, especially early in the match, things were starting to get a little chippy, but honestly, nothing worse than I've seen, I don't know, most of the year. Like I thought overall it was pretty mellow, like nothing crazy. I will say this, like the refs maybe didn't know this, but our players know each other really, really well. A lot of them played together in club and they've known each other for a really, really long time. And so a lot of the talk and banter that was going across the net was nothing more than some good friends like competing and having some fun. And at one point the ref calls the two captains over, and there was a little bit of a warning of like, hey, let's tone it down. Let's not get out of control. And in our head on our bench, we were like, hey, did the refs have a meeting after the Long Beach Santa Barbara incident? And they were like, hey, we got to make sure we control the situation. Wasn't quite sure of that. But at some point, we were in rotation four. We end up overpassing a ball. Our setter turns towards the net. And I think, let me actually back up. We had gotten a yellow card. One of our captains got a yellow card. Different player than our setter. That was Kyle Hobus who got the yellow. When we overpass, setter turns, stuffs San Diego's middle blocker, and then he turns towards the net without much audio, but just looks across the net with his hands out and then turns towards the group. Red card. And we were shocked as ever, in the sense that I think at that point it was maybe 12 all or 13 all. It ended up being a 2-point set, and for sure a point that we would have liked back. But I think what I've always tried to understand is what are the merits for a red card? And obviously a lot of it is up to opinion and it's incredibly subjective, but in the grand scheme of volleyball, right, it's the one and only time where you essentially can earn a point without having earned the point. And I talked to the refs after the game, and what the, at least from their understanding, was it's taunting. So by staring across the net is a version of taunting. And after being warned of chippiness going back and forth, apparently if you look across the net for anything longer than 2 seconds, that's considered a taunt. And I think that's the most BS of all time. But you know, I think I come from a basketball world early on in my sporting career, and looking at somebody is a penalty. That seems shocking to me. But I'll let Brad give his take. But I thought the weekend was great. They came back to Northridge the next night. We weren't up 2-0 to start that five setter, and San Diego never gave up. They rallied back. They played incredibly well. You know, you look at the stats, I think we outscored them in a lot of ways. I think that they were a couple errors cleaner than us. But it was really, really some great volleyball.
Well, I just want to adjust one thing, because although I was on the sand all weekend, I did speak to referees that were there. So I have to, they're anonymous referees, and they saw that incident as well, because we were all watching in the evening, and they said, yep. I go, why did Constable get the red card? They said, well, it doesn't matter. If it's, it was a yellow card infraction, it's a second yellow, it's going to be a red. So that was explained to me. It's like, oh, I had no idea. I thought this was a yellow per individual player until that individual player gets a second yellow, which turns to a red.
Well, he didn't have a yellow yet. Number 7 had the yellow.
Right. But he said that any other yellow after that first one turns into a red on that side. So
that's not right.
That's not correct.
This is from a seasoned veteran, we'll just say.
He can season himself all he wants to. I think that's a matter of opinion. And I'm a seasoned coach, so how about we throw that out there?
100% true. And I told you last week the pendulum was going to swing the opposite side, and the fun police were going to come out in full force. Maybe your guys sneezed at him, Theo, and they thought that there was going to be some COVID risk, and they thought it was on purpose. And that's why they pulled out the card, because, you know, heaven forbid they ever watch a football or basketball game and see that stuff going on. It's ridiculous. And in baseball, there's guys throwing baseballs at people at 90 miles an hour, and they don't get tossed out of games all the time. So, it's stupid.
That's my thing too. Like, I think as a sport, like, what is our actual stance? Like, I know the game has evolved quite a bit, and from where it was in the early 80s. And, you know, I think that we are becoming a more of an entertainment sport, and it's much more entertaining than I think it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And so when you look at a television broadcast of a game, to see some passion, to see some teams going back and forth. Now, obviously nothing inappropriate or out of line in terms of disrespect and language, but to see a little bit of, like, you know, the Kimbe Mutombo gets a shot block and wags the finger. That's great for television. That's great for the broadcast. That's great for the people on TV and in person. And for our little 6'2" setter to get a big block and a turn and give them one of these, I think that's great for TV. I think it's great for entertainment. And when you shut it down, it changes the passion and the ability for these guys to enjoy this game and play with some charisma.
Even the women's volleyball teams, if you watched over the course of last season, there was plenty of stare downs and plenty of, you know, giggles and laughs and pointing and this and that. Nobody seemed to have an issue with them, but all of a sudden, we have one thing happen last week at Santa Barbara, and all of a sudden the whole world is in arms of men's volleyball because they think that we're going to go crazy. Again, I go back to, you know, maybe with the exception of Alan and Rick in that moment, most coaches that I know, and definitely everybody on this screen, if anything were to start happening that was out of line, we would all step in on our side immediately, pull our guys back and be like, hey, you know, it's okay to have a little fun, but let's not get crazy. Fights are not breaking out. They're just not. And we have access to so much video from around the world and the pro leagues and this and that. You see that stuff happening all the time. And so why are we all of a sudden being victimized for looking at somebody after a big stuff or a big kill? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so the irony of it all was the setter, Donovan. Apparently, the guys told me after the match, like 2 weekends ago, he was down hanging out with one of our guys on our team, and they were all together. And the guy he stuff blocks, Peter, one of our middles, he said, come on, Pete, after he stuffs him, like totally in playfulness. And that was what led to it. And I actually saw Donnie when we got up to Northridge the next day. And the unfortunate piece was, it was kind of just bad timing, given the situation. And we're lucky we have the three same refs that are the R1, R2, or off every single match. So we get to know them pretty well. And they did mention there's a higher sense of awareness on managing the box and the bench staying in the box and the stare throughs and all that stuff. And I think the timing of that just, time and place was more the worst situation of it all, rather than what actually was done.
Yeah,
because I don't think it was bad at all.
like the fact that an incident, if they were just doing a little better job about the box, like I think places should be doing, we have a little bit less of that and you don't have to go through that. So it's like, they're like, oh, now we got to enforce it because we weren't doing our job when we should have been.
Yeah.
And you're going to make a team or a kid suffer because you think you got to ramp it up. Well, why don't you just level out and not do that? Like, to me, the kid could have happened and it could have been like, hey, it's like, we're really trying to keep it on your, and just do the warning thing that they've done thousands and thousands of times when they know the kids know each other, especially if they know you coaches. It's not like you got two new officials that you guys don't know and, or walked over to Theo and be like, hey, Theo, we're really trying to rein this in. Can you make sure that we do a better job? And like, yeah, so much better than hand it then versus like, hey, and that's the great thing about collegiality of men's volleyball. We're not FIVB and it's going like, I'm not going to say a word to you, say anything. And so I think that would be my disappointing thing. It's like, you don't need to issue that to get your point across.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a previous relationship in terms of that. So.
Yeah. And then in terms of the volleyball piece, right? For us, we had a 3-match week. And another layer that, you know, even I'm still learning here in the UC system is we have finals this week. So we're off. We have no matches. We'll have small group practices throughout the week. But what's interesting is within UCSD and our academic system, the week before finals is pretty darn tough on the guys, with essays being done, presentations, final reports needing to be completed, and then obviously studying for all the finals ahead. So we had a few meetings leading up to last week about, how do we set you guys up for success? Because 3 matches in this week is really, really hard. And I think I mentioned Theo, we had 4 8 a.m. finals on Saturday morning after we played the 5-set match up in Northridge. So you guys had some quick turnarounds after they got back from the bus ride. But it was really cool for us just to, one, just work together and collaborate on a plan to set them up to be successful on the court, but also, you know, on Saturday in their finals and all through this week in their finals. And then to see that reward pay off with some positive results in the week was really cool. And then in terms of our first match with Northridge, I think the big difference was our serving. We had a really great night from the end line and put a ton of consistent pressure. And even the first set we lost was Northridge served us off the court and got two overpasses and I think 3 aces in there as well. And then sets 2, 3, and 4, we missed 8 serves in those last 3 sets, which was going. And then night 2 up at Northridge, it was a battle. And those first 2 sets, Northridge was humming and putting a ton of pressure on us from the service line. And our passing broke down and our out of system wasn't quite where it needed to be against Theo's big blockers and good defense all around the block, to where, you know, we were trying to find a rhythm, trying to sort through what we were going to do to score a few more points. And we're able to make a few adjustments blocking wise. We're able to make a few adjustments from the end line. We were able to mix in one of our outside hitters as well. And we just found a few more ways, and it was not very clean or super pretty, but yeah, we were just able to manage a few balls from the end line serving and a few attacks and turn them into some points. And we ended up on the positive end of a 5-set battle.
Good stuff. Any other coaches in for want to chip in, discuss?
I watched it live, but I don't get to do that very often. So I watched that 4th and 5th game at Theo's place, and some great volleyball. So I do agree with Theo. I think Brad was just a hair cleaner in some areas, and especially like some second contact stuff, I think, where Theo's guys could have maybe made a non-setter setting and put themselves in a little bit better spot. And so, but we know how fine that line is in those games sometimes. And so, but certainly some great volleyball for sure.
Yep. Well, Big West now 4 matches in conference play, which, you know, there's only 6 total teams. So still 2/5 of the way done, but we can't avoid talking about the other matchup going down South 405 from where you guys are, depending what night you're in, or North 405. But you had No. 1 Hawaii visiting Long Beach State for 2. Wanted to get your guys' thoughts. I was there, but I want to hear the coaches, because your breakdown's far better than what I could ever do. So who wants to jump in?
I'll start, because I've touched upon it this season so far. Hawaii maybe does not have the depth that everyone thought they did. And Spiros going down for the season, which is just such a bummer, was a major cog in that whole thing. He's a massive part of why Hawaii was the way they were earlier on in the year. And now without him, you're seeing the pressure start to go on to the guys around him, you know, Chaz Galloway and Alakai Todd and you got a Thim, and maybe their consistency. It's not that they're not good players, but maybe their consistency was not as high as Spiros was. And Voss is dominating, but he's only in there for three of the six rotations. And, you know, they're not able to keep in system as often, which is a massive reason why Voss is so successful. And their young setter, Rosenthal, is doing some nice things, but he looked a little bit erratic with location and maybe some decisions here and there. He's going to be an absolutely world-class setter when he's done. But I think Hawaii is going to have to figure some things out. They had a backup, Sakonoko, I believe is his name. Is that correct, Rob? You're the one who
Louis Sakonoko, the Frenchman.
Yeah. He's got an absolute cannon for an arm, but he's a little bit inconsistent and maybe passing-wise not quite as crisp as maybe some of the other guys that played before him. But, you know, Hawaii will retool. They'll figure some things out. They'll get after it. But I was impressed with Long Beach, and I was impressed with Nathan Harlan. The kid came in and was an absolute spark plug and, you know, got a couple of big blocks and a couple of big swings and even set a couple of balls here and there. Kid can come. He can do anything. And I liked what I saw with Long Beach. They're going to be, in my eyes, you know, definitely one of the two teams that comes out of the Big West for sure. They're just so deep. And they're non... their non-suited up roster is bigger than most teams' regular rosters. So he's got a lot of people to work with. But hats off to Long Beach, two big matches and took them both, and they're going to be a force.
I'd actually, from what I saw, and I didn't watch night one, but from what I saw, the pieces of night two, I think Kauai's going to be all right. You know, and just losing a piece like that, like, you go through the season and you go through the fall and you're planning out, you're mapping out. All right. What's our best lineup? How are we going to get better? What's our team identity? And then you take your best player, one of your best players out, and that completely shifts and changes. And I think their response from night one to night two, being able to completely turn the tide, you know, I think they were down at some big points at 19-17 in the third set with their back against the wall. And being able to find that spark plug with Louis and finding how they're going to play and working through that. You know, I think their team really changes in the sense, right? They lose some passing and some ball control, but they were pretty good on defense. Their block was pretty good at times. You know, so it's just pieces that they're going to have to rework and refine and fine tune for how they want to play. And I thought the biggest piece that hurt them, interestingly enough, was, you know, you think about putting Keone Thim into the lineup, you think about his serve and how that's going to benefit your team. But I thought the energy he has to exert to be good offensively and to be good in serve receive and to be good blocking really hurt him when he got back to the end line and he had those opportunities to score. And he was back there around 20 every single time for his third serve. And really, one, Long Beach is a pretty darn good passing team. And two, I think that fatigue starts to set in on a player who has to put that much into every other aspect of their game, to where we saw a little bit of those errors, you know. And then you pair that with Louis, who's a young server trying to find his stride in there. You know, I think that was a few little pieces that, you know, originally I didn't think would affect him too much, and that, you know, I thought could have been the difference there.
Yep.
I think it's so funny, Brad, because you and I actually had a very similar take, and I was going to talk about the comparison between being a long drive competition winner in golf. You know, there's these guys who can just bomb off the tee, and Thim, to me, has been, from a serving sub perspective, one of the better ones we've seen in recent years. And he comes in and plays, and that was my initial thought was, now they have a six rotation server who is one of the better servers in the conference. And I felt the exact same way. I felt like him having to actually play the entire match and do everything else as a volleyball player, he wasn't the same server at the end line. I thought Simon Twerwe did a fantastic job and kind of agreeing with a combination of what Brad and Jay said in that first match between Hawaii and Long Beach. I was thinking, and I think so was the rest of the country, Hawaii's in trouble. And this is going to be a long year trying to figure some things out. I was obviously surprised and encouraged by where they're at the second match. And really, I mean, the reality was I thought Tread made one kind of crucial setting error, and that led right into Simon Twerwe that ended up kind of deciding the match. But they were right there with a shot at beating Long Beach in the pyramid, packed house, with a lineup that they had not used quite yet. And yeah, I think that as time goes on, Hawaii is only going to improve, and they've got some incredible talent. It's just a matter of kind of retuning and refocusing how that group sees success because they haven't seen it yet.
Yep.
I watched both matches and agree with Brad and Theo. I think the adjustments and improvements you saw from night one to night two on that were pretty big. I think the other thing you got to read, Chaz was out, rolled his ankle, had to come back in. But I just think your perception of how you view Hawaii, like they're not going to be in system as much, but they have the weapons with the Frenchmen and Chaz to be a good medium out of system team, if not one of the best in the country, with Todd on the back pen, where like they could be really, really dangerous. And then all of a sudden, when they are in system, you throw Voss in there and he's pretty unstoppable at times. So I think don't count them out. I think you would get to this tournament bracket thing. I honestly think the two at large is coming out of the Big West. And here's why. And I think it's GCU lost to Irvine in Hawaii. And so, like, I think you're going to come down to that. And if those teams, all of the three that are battling, and you look at them, you're not going to look at Hawaii and go, well, they're missing this guy, so they shouldn't be in it. There's no way you look at it like that, because I think they're going to be playing too high a level of volleyball in terms of that. So, but yeah, it certainly was some great volleyball to watch. And, you know, Allen plugging in some different pieces, whether it's Nato Dickerson on a block or Harlan coming in or like, but Simon Torrey's the man. Like that guy.
Unsung hero.
Like wow. We talk about, you know, national player of the years and middle hasn't been in a while. I'm not on that committee anymore, but like, man, y'all want to see his numbers and where he's at the end of the year. And man, he is just a beast. Like he is shutting guys down by himself and just some incredible moves and how he attacks and hits. And I know his serve is off, but a lot of times he's a serving weapon back there too. And so,
yeah,
I enjoy watching him play for sure.
I think it's interesting because all you guys have your perspective and you're watching remotely. I was there and watching firsthand, and none of you mentioned night one, the challenges. I think I went back to the play-by-play. I guess they don't mark it in there if there's a challenge, but he's like 5-0, 4-0 at crucial points. Hawaii could have easily turned that first night when I was there. It was amazing. Like, you know, there's a ball that was close, but you know, from where I was sitting, looked out, I'm like, oh, the Hawaii point. Sticking it out, pull the card out, boom, got the point. Five times. And Hawaii was battling. That's the thing that was amazing to see, the tweaks that Charlie made. Sure, they were kind of trying to manipulate Keone at the right side. They're setting Skylar Varga a lot more, but I mean, they're holding their own. And Guillerme Voss, another unsung here on the Hawaii side, he's what, 6'8"? Seen him next to Simon Twerwe, who is 6'10". He actually made Guillerme look small. And we know Guillerme is not a small guy. But, I mean, the fact that those challenges came in when they did, you look at the scores night one, is 22, 25, and 23. And they could have easily gone either way. And night two, the tweaks that they made, you just see Hawaii become more confident. And, man, watching Tread Rosenthal, crazy freshman player. And then Louis coming in. He put I put a highlight on my Instagram. He thumped one right in front of us that had a lot of noise, and that place was noisy. And you heard the whole crowd go, oh. But I mean, I think they're going to be okay. You know, they just need maybe one or two more matches. And I think Thea's going to have to experience the Hawaii team next to the screen. But I think they're going to be okay. I mean, I'm bummed about Spiros and what happened to him, but gosh, Charlie's coaching staff is doing, they're getting every little bit out of him. And I think they're playing really well. You know, they walked off the court with their heads high. They knew they like, you know what? We just took the number two team in the nation to 5 in their house. So yeah, they're good. And another unsung hero, Eleo Choi, their libero. Long Beach was bombing. You know, they had Gobble come in, Torwee. They had Varga at the right side. Then De'Aris McRaven. Oh, my goodness. Did you see that picture from Volleyball Mag? He was like waist above the net, legs still bent. Looked like he's still going up and hitting over blocks. So, Al pulled Butchkov and put De'Aris in. And, man, that guy can bang. So, and he was blocking a bunch as well. But with that, the Big West still early on in conference play, halfway point, so to speak. And, you know, Theo can give us the on's hand report after Hawaii this coming weekend. So any other matches on chat back? So you have a special segment we all talked about doing, and that was a great idea. And don't want to skip out on anything that was another big match. No? All right. All right, listeners, viewers, you get the first ever, if you were on the NCAA committee episode, pretending like our coaches would be on the NCAA committee, and we actually pre-recording, we're trying to work out, should we discuss a 8-team format or a 12-team format NCAA tournament? And they're like, let's do them both. So see who the last four out are going to be, or, you know, if you go to the 12 version, the next four in. So, you know, since Brad was the one who dropped the suggestion, let's let him go first.
All right. So for us, we got, so we'll look at the 8-team bracket first. So we have the two at-larges, and then we'll have the 6 automatic qualifiers. And maybe I'm just, maybe I'm just taking the easy way out here. But for the automatic qualifiers, I'm just going to give it to the top team in each conference, which does get a little tricky when you get to the Big West. But we'll just go ahead and give it to Long Beach, MPSF. I think Grand Canyon's still at the top there. MEVA, yep. What? We have Ball State now. Up there, EVA, Penn State, Conference Carolina, Belmont Abbey, who actually just lost a 5-set battle against Charleston this past weekend. And then SIAC, I believe Fort Valley State.
They're two undefeated teams. Fort Valley State and Edward Waters are both at 3-0 right now.
Okay. So, you know, we'd have that. So then in terms of the two at-larges, where it gets really tricky is you have Hawaii, UCLA, and Irvine. And those would be the three teams competing for those two spots. Then also there's BYU, there's Stanford. You also could maybe even argue.
You just get to pick two, Brad. You don't get to talk about it. You got to pick
I know,
two.
I'm more setting the stage. You know, leaning into it. But ultimately, I'd go Hawaii, UCLA.
Oh, man, get the hate mail going. Brad Rothschilder at UCSD.edu.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hawaii gets the nod there. They have the 5-set win over Irvine. They're obviously going to play 2 more times this year. Then when you look at UCLA versus Irvine, UCLA won that season series. So I think that puts Irvine as the odd team out, which would be insane, you know, seeing their record, seeing where they're at in Big West play, and having Haleer Heno not playing in a national tournament doesn't sound very exciting. Seems like we're leaving maybe the player of the year now home from the final tournament of the year. So, but that's where
you
I would
go, Rod, throwing some salt at you, Rob. No, your team doesn't know, do it, buddy.
Whatever, Brad, whatever. And I do need to say for our listeners and viewers, I'm going to keep saying this out. This is just, as of now, don't get your panties all in a wad. We're just projecting. Things going to change. We still have to have conference tournaments. So this is what we're working off of, available information. So don't send hate mail to Brad. Send it to Jay. So.
And we already played Irvine, so I can't go to Irvine and get heckled anymore. So we're good.
All right. Who wants to take the next stab here on the
I got
if
it.
You were on the NCAA committee segment.
I'm next. So I got Belmont, McKendree for the MEVA, Irvine for the Big West, UCLA for the MPSF, Fort Valley State, George Mason for the EVA.
Ooh.
And then Grand Canyon's out because they lost to Hawaii. And then so Hawaii and Long Beach are in. So Grand Canyon's going to send me the hate mail now.
So Matt will just come find you.
Can you help me with the McKendree one, Dan?
What do you want help with? I'm just last year they had that first round upset in the conference tournament against Loyola. They're just going to get hot. It's just going to happen. It's going to get hot. Hey, so remember, I can change in 2 weeks.
With
just
tournament
so you know.
Now.
This is just today, buddy. I can change in 2 weeks.
Okay? Hey, I think Dan, you play McKendree this week?
I already played him.
He just played him. Nikki, you guys made a great impression.
Nikki, you can send me the free Starbucks stuff later on.
Yeah, pretty higher end. She's the associate athletic director now, right?
Yeah.
True.
All right. You got Dan's picks. They're not picks. Are the projections as of today, everyone? No hate mail. We love these guys. Just we're making it fun here. Where would we be at today? So I think who's ready here? Jay, you're sitting there quiet. I don't know if there's like a bunch of like gears rolling up there or
are we doing the 8 or are we doing the 12?
8.
All right.
8.
All right. Big West. I've got Long Beach and UC Irvine. Miva, I've got Ball State. EIVA. Listen, I'm just going to go with Mason because that's me. But it could be anyone between Penn State, us, and Princeton. But that's who I'm going with. SIAC, I got Fort Valley State. Conference Carolinas, it's going to be tough between Belmont Abbey and Mount Olive. But because Belmont Abbey already has one, I'm going to go with them. But Mount Olive's a sneaky one. The MPSF, listen, UCLA's 5-1 and Grand Canyon's at 6-0, but they haven't played each other yet. And I'm wondering, you know, if Grand Canyon has hit its ceiling or if they have a couple more gears left that they could find. But right now, I'm going with UCLA. However, I'm going to add the next at-large to Hawaii. That's going to be my call. Those are my 8 right there.
Oh.
MPSF's not going to get a next one.
All right, Theo.
All right. Yeah. So here's how I have it. MPSF, I have UCLA winning that. Big West, Long Beach. Conference Carolinas is a really tough one. I agree with all these guys. I think you got a lot of really good teams, and it's really, I mean, like all of these conferences, it's who's the best at the end. But I think Belmont Abbey pulls that one out. I got Fort Valley in the SIAC. And then I think Loyola wins the MIBA. I think they're playing some really great ball right now too. Then I have Penn State out of the EIVA. And I think the at-large for Irvine and for Grand Canyon take place. Although I think Grand Canyon is, without winning it, it's going to be tough. But let's see how the season ends and how things go from here.
Well, team health is obviously beginning to be an issue here because we're seeing guys go down. Like we haven't seen Jacob Pasture for Ohio State. You know, obviously Spiro's going down and then sprained ankles, little injuries, nagging injuries. I mean, those still have to play out as well. So it's going to be tournament time, honestly. But you know what? We're doing this fun segment and we've done 8. I guess we go to the 12. I'm not going to say anything because I don't want any hate mail. I get plenty already. So not as much as Jay, though, but still, I don't deal well with it. We'll go back to, let's go reverse direction on the 12. So the ALU ready to do 12 if you needed to go to 12 or should I rotate
so,
same order? And start
so we talked about it. We go 12. Are we using the NEC?
Yes. NEC is the AQ.
Okay. And so you know what? Let's let Dan go first. Dan's got this figured out.
Oh, okay. So St. Francis out of the NEC. I call that. And then Grand Canyon's in for sure. And since I picked McKendree, Ball State's in for sure. And then, ooh, that leaves me two spots, right? Well, since I gave it to Jay, Penn State's in. I got to get another EVA team. You know what I mean? So, like, and so I got one spot left. I think that's, man, that's tough. I don't want to be the committee anymore.
And this is what actually happens in the committee meetings.
I know. So, because I think it could be Loyola, Ohio State. It could be BYU. Man. Yeah. Well, since I'm Amoeba guy, I'm going to give it to I got to give it to Loyola. They beat Ohio State twice. You know what I mean? So I guess Loyola gets in. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Dan went first. Who wants to take on the second position for our 12-team tournament? Jay?
I'll go. I'll be quick here. I gave you my eight. Grand Canyon is for sure going to get a bid. I've got Loyola getting the next one from the MEVA, them and Ball State I have in the finals. We're going at NEC. I'm going LIU. I think LIU is a team that's really, really strong, and they've already seen some success in that conference. My last one, BYU.
Ooh, changing it up there. All right. Let's go.
So yep. I see. All right. So I don't know if Amoeba gets a second team in looking at this, because we have the rankings, and obviously we don't know about this week, and they just had a big win against Ohio State. But it seems like it'll be someone from the grouping of teams of BYU, Pepperdine, Stanford, maybe potentially Loyola, but they lost a lot of those non-conference matches early on in the year, which could end up hurting in this faux 12-team bracket here. So I got, I'll recap, Long Beach, Hawaii, Irvine are all in. You got Grand Canyon, UCLA in. I think Ball State out of the MEVA. You got Penn State, Belmont Abbey, Fort Valley. Damon is my NEC representative. And then that leaves two spots for BYU, Stanford, maybe Loyola, Pepperdine, maybe. And I'd probably say at this point it'd be BYU and Pepperdine, but then this is where the regionality comes in. And then does Loyola get that nod or over Loyola or Ohio State get that nod over another West Coast team? And that'd be the interesting piece. But if we're going straight random world and we don't have to worry about that, I'd probably say BYU, Pepperdine.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think I was going the regionality because I know that's how they're going to go. It'll be an interesting when they expand to 12 and they go regionality in this conversation. This will be the big debate. We're like, hey, you got BYU, but you need another team from the East or the Midwest because of the regionality thing, or are you going to fly BYU out there? So it'll be interesting to see what the directive has been given to the committee if that happens. Do you know what I mean in terms of that? So.
And would that be like a mileage, like? Hey, a team around 250, 400 miles, like.
I don't know. I honestly, I don't know. I don't know how they've got it structured in the written part of that COC piece, do you know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, you can do this, but when we make selections, one of the caveats is, hey, are they within this range as well? So it's like, you're going to pick two East Coast teams. You're going to pick two Midwest teams. You're going to pick four West Coast teams. Or I don't know if there's how that lays out. So.
I think it's so interesting because you got to rack your brain for those early matches too. And having like that Loyola win over Hawaii, right? And the Grand Canyon turn, like going into the outrigger. And honestly, if Lewis wins that five setter, I think that changes everything for Grand Canyon. So this is so difficult. I have St. Francis out of NEC, UCLA, Long Beach, Belmont Abbey, Fort Valley, Loyola, Penn State. And then I think the regionality piece makes it really difficult. But I think Hawaii's in, Irvine's in. And then you go Grand Canyon. And then it's a toss-up for me between BYU and Stanford. Stanford lost to us. Stanford had multiple drops at some point. BYU has had multiple drops at some point. I think Stanford's are probably worse, but I think BYU and Stanford potentially get in. or this is tough. This can be,
I think this is
really tough.
The part for me is like just that situation you're talking to, BYU, Stanford, like you're leaving home a team that's beaten good teams and can beat good teams and players who are really, really good on this team. Like Stanford, yeah, but Bill Rotman's done. And well, I mean, it's the case, but
that's no different than Loyola, though. Loyola, I mean,
yeah, like, no, for sure. Yeah.
But well, in the 8-game format, in the 8-team format, we're leaving those teams home regardless. That's the even crazy part.
Well, in basketball, I like what they did. They showed the quarter results. So first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter in terms of their season. And they showed some teams that maybe in the beginning of the year didn't have a very good record, but they showed, you know, the improvements. And then by the end of the year, they're undefeated in the rest of the conference. They're doing other wins against other teams and not. So they're showing the improvement. And I think that's where the BYUs, the Stanfords can be in that conversation. The Grand Canyon had a couple of hiccups, but they're still 6-0 in conference. And they're still, whatever their overall record is, they're a good team that had a little bit of a bump and a bruise, but overall in their sections, they're doing really, really well. So
I think if you did that graph on Stanford, it wouldn't be. It would be, they'd kind of be up and then down. And so, like, you wouldn't see. So that's a team for me. And then I'd be curious to see BYU's. Like, BYU started out a little slow and then got a little bit better. And so it's an interesting way that maybe the committee will take your suggestion, Jay.
We're missing the last 4-week snapshot, right? And like, where are these teams now? And it's, and for like a team like Stanford with Rotman back full time, and you give him 4 or 5 weeks underneath his belt for them to get humming again, I think it'd be interesting to see what that looks like.
Well, and UCLA Grand Canyon is going to be a major one, because then we're going to see who's starting to step up, or not who's starting to step up, but who stands out in the MPSF, because those two teams are head and shoulders above everybody else right now. So,
well, Rob, you remember last year, Irvine at the end of the year and what they were doing and how they were playing in the Big West tournament. And I mean, at that point, I think Darcy was just starting to enter the lineup, and they had the almighty opposite from last year.
Let's go. Sonny.
Yeah, Sonny. And they were playing some really great ball, but it was just too late, right? And they ended up getting left at home. And I don't know, at that time, I think that they would have been a real contender for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and UCI's got, I mean, they didn't, Flexen is still out, and Darcy, they didn't play in that last match on against Hawaii. It'd be interesting to see if he was in, would he have made a difference in that match? I mean, they went 5 sets with 2 tiny little guys shrinking the court 15 feet. That's a team you might not want to face later on down the line. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this, because I know that there was discussion about the criteria going to the KPI versus the RPI. I've been trying to search it. I thought I saw it somewhere at a site where that was going to be the criteria. I didn't know if it's just through a blog or an official NCAA site, but what is the official criteria when it comes to that? What I guess, metric is going to be used for the tournament this year?
Dan should know that answer.
Well, I do know they're using the KPI, but if you want me to give you what the KPI is exactly, I am not that smart. That might be in Brad's wheelhouse better than me, do you know what I mean? But I do know the KPI is being used. And I was given kind of how the KPI is calculated, and I'd have to go to my notes, but I know it's being used within one of the prongs of the selection committee as they do that. So,
all right. Well, based on the A-team tournament, we're guaranteed to have good teams left out, minimum 4 up to 8. It sounds like, I said it was 6, but you know, it sounds like they're, with the way teams are playing, we're gonna be missing some good teams.
Well, and it's listen, we can go from, we went from 4 to 6 to 7 to 8 to 12. There's always going to be somebody arguing this team got hosed and they're just outside the bubble. Look at the men's basketball tournament. They added 12 more games, and there's still people pissed off about this team getting hosed and not getting in. And I mean, it's part of the fun of the debate. As long as it doesn't get personal, it's part of the fun. Yeah. And, you know, they're all deserving at some point.
I do think, if we go basketball real quick, Big East might have had some problems coming up. That's, they might have the biggest gripe with the men's basketball tournament.
Yeah, my boy Kim English didn't get a bid there from Providence. I was hoping he was going to get his shot at the big dance this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the current RPI on the NCAA thing right now, which you can go look up, I mean, they've got UCLA 1, Grand Canyon 2, Long Beach 3, Hawaii 4, Irvine 5, BYU 6, Stanford 7, Ohio State. It kind of goes down from that. So I can't imagine they're totally negating the RPI. I just know the KPI is being used as well in the process in terms of that. Yep. So.
Well, you guys, I appreciate you playing in our first ever segment. If you guys were on the NCAA committee, and we've all discovered that it's going to be a hard job.
If it happened today, it would be.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually pulled up KPI while I had that chance to chat, and UCLA 1, Grand Canyon 2, Long Beach 3, Hawaii 4, Irvine 5, BYU 6, Loyola at 7. Look at that. Stanford at 8, Ohio State at 9, Pepperdine 10, Penn State, and Ball State at 11 and 12. So a little differentiation there. So, well, we'll have to revisit this as we get closer to tournament time and conference tournament time, but always got to do the fun segment, and that's who's going to steal each other's player of the week. We'll just rename it. So, let's see. Since Brad was a mastermind of our new segment, he can go and have the first choice. Yes. One or two, or a team like Jay does.
I'm going one here. I've got Pat Rogers, Ball State. 24 kills, 383 against Ohio State. I don't know what he did the other night, to be honest, too, but he balled out against Ohio State. Gives him first place in the MIVA.
He might be the MIVA player of the year.
Over Tanashi, huh?
You go look at his numbers and where he's at, like on the stats stuff for the MIVA. If they finish out strong, I mean, statistically wise, we thought Jacob Pasture going into it, you know, him popping in and out of injuries, though, he might end up being the guy. So,
yeah. All right, let's go up to Dan, since you were bringing us that other info tidbit.
John Dietrich, 218 kill performance back to back, certainly with two sweeps between Lynnwood and Ohio State. You know, he was pretty instrumental hitting 500, and I haven't watched the video, but I think he might be playing opposite now. I gotta go back and look, but like if they did do that and did move him over there, like he was a beast his first couple of years over there, and so, but he may be swinging on both sides a little bit in terms of that. But yeah, John Dietrich. So
all right, let's go over to Jay.
Well, those are both my picks, so I'm going with 25 others. You ready? I'm going to give my boy.
Can I go first, man?
Yeah. I'm going to give my boy Omar Hoyos some love, hitting the 1,000 career mark kills this Saturday. I think that's quite remarkable. And he's a fine, upstanding young man. And I'm going with the entire UC San Diego men's team for having finals during a week where they had three matches. And an 8 a.m. final on Saturday after traveling up to Northridge and going a 5-set of the night before. I got to give those kids some love. That's a massive, massive student athlete prop right there.
Red card.
Good for you guys, Tritons.
You got to give a yellow first.
Yellow card.
Apparently, Brad should have finals every week. Maybe that would be better, you know?
I told the guys next week we're scheduling 7 matches that week, so.
I get, hey, I give it a check.
All of Big West in on that week. Guys, right, like 7 serves all night on night one. That's unbelievable. God, finals is helping. All right, where was I? I'm actually going to give Sebastian Lara. He was fantastic. Really, really played great. The transfer from Loyola, who's at San Diego, had a really great couple of nights against us. And then I'm going to go Simon Torwee. That guy was freaking good, man. Really, really outstanding. You know, I always love, too, when you get to see two of the top middles in the country meet and play on the same stage. And I'm always interested to see which one's going to have a bigger impact. And granted, there's a big difference between the period of time that they've been gelling with their setters and things of that nature. And obviously, Long Beach being at home is a little bit of an advantage. But Simon was fantastic, by far the best middle on the court. I'm also going to give a shout out to Kyle Hobus because he also hit the 1,000 mark this weekend. Yeah, that is one heck of an achievement for any volleyball player. But that guy's done some really great things for us, and he had a fantastic week and fantastic career so far.
Great picks. Quickly, though, what you watching this week? Pick one, and we'll move on and end. Theo, go.
Sure. Yeah, I think there's a couple of good ones and ones that I think are going to be interesting. But, if I got to pick one, BYU Pepperdine, I think is going to be a really, really interesting matchup. But I also, staying on that MPSF side, GCU and kind of where they're at playing against Concordia. And I think Concordia is capable of knocking off anybody. And I think that'll be an interesting matchup.
Okay. I'll go over to Dan.
Jersey City battle, Princeton and NJIT. We'll see how that goes. So that should be a pretty good one. And then the Theo Knights in Hawaii.
That's got to be the worst nickname yet.
Are you at Hawaii or are you home?
We're at Hawaii. We leave Wednesday.
Nice. So it'll be the return. I'm sure you'll get all the Hawaii fans there for sure. Do you know what I mean?
It'll be great.
Go to Jay.
Island Vintage Coffee, peanut butter and mango sandwich, Theo. You can thank me later. Of course, we got to go with Ohio State, Ball State, and we got to go with PFW in Ball State. Those are two matches that PFW riding a little high right now. And in Ball State, let's see if they can stay on top of the Amoeba. But I absolutely agree with Dan. Sponsored by the Sopranos, it's Battle, New Jersey with Princeton NJIT. Two boys getting after it there. It's going to be a fun mess. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And then Brett.
Let's see. I had Ohio State, Ball State there. And then also Northridge, Hawaii. I think those are going to be two fun matches. Hang on 1 second while I dig for another one.
Dig for another. He's digging.
There's a couple.
McKendree Loyola.
It's a good one.
I was wondering when someone would say that one, because those teams are both trending upward right now and they're both fully healthy. And that Amoeba is just a log jam after the number one spot. So that will be a fun one. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. That concludes episode number, 11, 12. It should be 12 this week, is it? Right? Yeah, sure. 12, yeah. Dan Friend of Lewis, Jay Hossick of George Mason, Theo Edwards of CSUN, Brad Rostrater of UC San Diego, and current victor of the Battle Royale with Cheese, Cobra Kai, or Karate Kid 6 episode. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for your contributions, and good luck this week. And we'll be on again in 7 days.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at The Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.